The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler, and normally on the program, we have a guest in addition to the segment that Jim and I do. But today, we are foregoing the guest and doing an expanded version of what it is you need to do to prepare for retirement in the form of some checklists that you can follow. Critical ideas that are essential in retirement planning.
And since it's the beginning of the new year and you have your New Year's resolutions, we're going to talk about setting goals, because the purpose of a plan is to set a goal. In addition to giving you reference points as time goes on as to what your plan is, we set goals to achieve, and knowing that your attitude towards money makes you more secure and more successful in reaching your goals.
Well, John, we always talk about the importance of having goals. I mean, if you want to retire or save for education, I mean, this is what planning is all about. It's setting goals and then putting together a strategy to achieve them. But, you know, it's not enough to just have a goal. Hey, I want to retire. Those goals need to be specific, because if you don't have specific goals, there's less chance of a success. For example, going back to retirement. So a goal is, hey, I'd like to retire. Well, let's translate that into something more specific. I want to retire at age 66 when I can get full retirement benefits from Social Security. And given my lifestyle and my budget needs, I want to have an income of $5,000 a month. Now, you see the difference there? You're getting specific. You're naming an age. You're naming an income or a lifestyle that you'd like to achieve. Big, big difference than say, hey, someday I'd like to retire. Well, if you don't have a date or some kind of income numbers or a kind of lifestyle you want to maintain, you know, you really aren't being specific, and those really aren't goals.
You know, this actually seems simple, but it's actually a little harder than it appears. I mean, the theory is simple. It's the execution that requires some planning and some discipline. This seems to be something that a lot of young people, especially, say, for example, you're just starting a young family, a young couple, have your first child, and talking about retirement seems far, far away. Well, it isn't as far away as you might think, because you have to plan for this over time. Let's take middle-aged couples, people in their 40s and 50s. A lot of times, they have a lot of competing goals. In the younger family, they're just trying to stay afloat and start out and get their careers going and the families going. In the middle age, well, sometimes they're acquiring their parents. They have to take care of their parents at that time as well, or put their kids through college. So a lot of competing goals, a lot of things competing for your attention. A lot of times parents think, well, this is interrupting my goal of the good life, so I'll think about retirement when I get ready to retire. So having a home, kids, education, weddings, very, very many competing goals that distract from your attention that you need to do, when in the reality, well, you're doing all of those other things, you need to have retirement in mind. So how do you deal with all these numerous goals and make them behave themselves, Jim, so they all come into a cohesive plan?
Well, I mean, you know, as you just mentioned, John, every family or individual is usually, when they're starting out or midlife, they're going to have multiple goals. For a young family starting out, it could be one of the things that we see today with young families starting out is getting rid of those student loans, so paying down debt. You might have a goal of saving money for, let's say, a down payment on a house. Usually with families starting out, household formations, you know, someday the dream of owning your own home is a big goal, along with paying off any debt that was accumulated and getting a college education. Then you might have a goal like, for example, having emergency funds. Now, when you start a family, then your goals really start to change, because you're now having children. You're worried about, okay, what does that mean? Having kids? Well, gosh, we'd like to have our kids have the same opportunities we did, so we'd like to have a college education. If you have girls, you might be thinking, well, they're going to get married someday. There's weddings. And then, of course, when it comes to yourself, it's always retirement. But, Johnny, when you're starting out, it's usually retirement's the furthest thing on your mind. There are other priorities, starting a family, that take top billing. So the key is to prioritize them. And then what you do is you set aside, based on your income, an allocation. Okay, we can save X amount of dollars. Now, of those dollars that we save, X percent goes to each goal. For example, you might set a plan that you have various stages in your life. Stage one, you just got married, you're starting a family. Stage two, you might be mid-level through your career, maybe in your 40s. Stage three, late 40s to 50s and 60s into retirement. And it might go something like this. In stage one, when you're starting out a family, 70% of your savings are going to go for, let's say, a down payment on a house, maybe 20% for weddings, kids' education, and 10% on retirement. Because if you're 25, 30 years old and you're starting out your working career, obviously you have 35 years ahead of you to put money aside to reach those goals. Now, in stage two, as you move through your life, you may find, all right, here we own a home. So we can check that off. We no longer have to allocate money for a down payment on a home. Now what we're focusing on is you have children. So we're going to try to allocate money for college or weddings if you have girls. And then we might want to start increasing the amount that goes towards retirement. And then finally, stage three, you're in your late 40s. You're probably approaching a peak in earnings, or you're obviously making more income when you're in your 40s, hopefully, than when you were in when you were 20 starting your career. So in stage three, it may be you've already owned your home, you put money aside for the kids' college education and their weddings. Now you're allocating 100% towards retirement. So what you're doing, John, is you have the goals, and what you do is you prioritize those that are most important to you. Obviously, any young family starting out, saving money for a down payment on a house, although you're seeing a lot of millennials today, John, that are just happy to rent instead of own. They don't want the burdens of housing costs, utilities, housing upkeep, association fees, all the things that go with housing. They're living more of an urban lifestyle. They're living downtown. Some of them don't even have cars. But the important thing is to set your goals, prioritize them, and as each of these goals are achieved, then what you do is you start increasing the percentages of your savings that will go towards these other goals. Essentially, the ultimate goal is your retirement. And the real key here, folks, there is no magic numbers here. It's starting early. And we'll do some shows on this later on to show you the significant difference. It doesn't take that much money when you're first starting out. And then also invest on a regular basis. You don't say to yourself, well, the market's correcting right now. There's worries about economic growth. You know, I'm not going to put money in my 401k. I'm not going to put money in a stock fund. You know, I'm going to change my investment portfolio because I'm fearful. And we'll get into that when we talk about attitudes towards money later on in this program.
All right, so here's the order of things. First of all, you need to prioritize your goals. And once they're prioritized in order, then you allocate your funds in the order of importance. This only makes sense right now. Now, as goals are achieved, what you do then is shift the allocations to the next goal. It's a reallocation of assets. I mean, this only makes sense, Jim. You know, it's like set them up, knock them down one by one over time as your goals are achieved. What other factors are important when you set the goals?
Well, I think probably the first is to be realistic. And this takes on, John, various different shades when it comes to goals. You know, living within your means in terms of buying a house. Gosh, I remember when we started out, we only had a 3-bedroom house. It was very small, but it was realistic given what my income was at that time getting out of graduate school. So starting out with realistic goals and realistic expectations. One of the big mistakes that we even see is when it comes to planning for our children. We all want the best for our children when it comes to being parents. But, you know, the unrealistic goals that parents set themselves up, it's almost they're setting themselves up for failure because you're saying, oh, gosh, it's going to cost $150,000, $200,000 to go to a private school or out-of-state school. I mean, a lot of that may be unrealistic. So what you need to do when you're setting up goals is the financial goals. Unless you are super affluent, you're making mega bucks, you know, maybe you moved up the corporate executive ladder very early in your career, or maybe you work in Silicon Valley, you're with a tech startup that went IPO like Facebook or Google or Apple or something like that, where you got all these stock options. Unless you're super affluent, it's really all about compromises because we all have different goals. Gosh, I want to retire early. I want to be rich. I want my kids to go to private school. You know, I want a really nice wedding, 200 people and all our family. All those things are great, but they have to be realistic. And many times what you find in goal setting given income and the ability to save, it's all about compromises. You know, one spouse may want one goal that's a higher priority. Another one may have a different one. And then you may have different attitudes towards risk and money. So it's all about compromise and being realistic.
I know you and I are big proponents of having realistic college goals. You know, sometimes people talk about name colleges. And if you're majoring in certain things, it's going to be important to go to certain colleges where their departments, whether it's chemistry or whatever the department happens to be, where they specialize in that, if that's going to be your field. But in reality, much of your college work can be achieved, especially all these diddle-em-dum requirements you have for all sorts of diverse courses. Those can be done at junior colleges and much more cheaply. As a matter of fact, it's a good transition between home and away because junior colleges are usually local. So when your kids come out of high school, they go to a junior college for the first 2 years, maybe get an associate's degree out of the way as well at the same time, but you get a lot of your prerequisites out of the way and other required courses which you don't want to take, but you know they're not going to give you a degree if you don't. And at the very same time, the kids can live at home or at least live within an hour or two drive of where you are. Typically, when you start talking about upper graduate work, you're talking about longer distances, and that's a whole different issue. So you look at, where do we want to send them? Junior college, state college, you should be working, you know, the kids going to work while they're in school. I did. I worked my way through a lot of college. Can they get an online education? How many of these courses can we rip out just online? I mean, I know that's the story of all of my kids, as a matter of fact. They all started at junior college, then went to a larger one, and then finally on to something different for graduate school. That's the point, Jim, where I usually start making threats about you'd better start supporting yourself, you know. So, I mean, we've got one left right now, and I have a running account of everything he's borrowed from me. And I said, and when you get your first big job after your doctoral degree, you are going to start paying me back, you know. So,
did you make him sign a contract? Did he sign papers?
I have other leverage over them.
So, okay.
I guess what I'm trying to say here is there were simpler ways to do things. You can get degrees from colleges that maybe aren't these most expensive colleges. And people, Jim, are beginning to debate this anyway, whether or not you're really getting a better education at some of these more expensive colleges. Prioritize the goals, reallocate your funds as the goals are met. And I would imagine that over these time, these goals, you know, from college to retirement would be changing. I know even in college, it did. Like my son, for example, was almost through his degree in chemistry, his undergraduate degree. He says, you know, I'm within so many credit hours of a second degree in mathematics. And this is really an important combination because you don't see it a lot. And so I said, sure, go for it. We reallocated there to make sure he was able to scoop up a second degree before he graduated from his undergraduate area there. It was a worthwhile thing. So from college to retirement, you know, I guess even protecting your legacy, you have to sort of protect your lifestyle and your legacy and do it all in one big clump. That's what planning's all about.
Well, I mean, there are priorities, you know, being realistic about some of these goals. And as you just talked about, I sent my kids through junior college, then on to state school, which was considerable savings. You know, I had three kids to put through school. But, you know, as you do this, one of the biggest mistakes I have seen made in retirement planning, John, is this unrealistic goal that we have to come up with $150,000 or whatever the number is for a private education or out-of-state education. That may be great if you're Larry Lots of Bucks. You're making buku money, and you have the money, you can set this aside. Or maybe you have grandparents, or your parents are saying, hey, we're going to help fund the kids' education, and they're contributing to the college fund as well. But over-allocating funds for out-of-state and private education can sap a lot of money away from money that is badly needed in retirement, and especially if you're doing this in your late 40s and 50s when you only have maybe 15 years or less than two decades away from retirement. Because to be successful in retirement, you start early and it takes a smaller amount of money. So you can start out, and I can show you just with a couple hundred bucks with maybe employer contributions and tax savings, it's almost next to nothing for saving retirement. And if you do it early enough, you will have those large dollars by the time you get to retirement. But that's usually not the case. Most people will find that the goals of having a home, saving for a home, maybe a larger home as the family expands, education, a lot of this stuff is just unrealistic. And I'm a big proponent, as you are, John, of junior college and state school, or working and maybe getting an online degree. I mean, I had three sons. All three of them went to junior colleges before they went to state school, even though one of my sons was valedictorian of his graduating high school class. But he didn't know what he wanted to be. Why am I going to go send him to Harvard or Stanford, even though he could have got into those schools, when he didn't know what he wanted to be? And so that's why I think that a lot of times starting out at a junior college, and there's nothing wrong, folks, with having your kids have a part-time job, work, or I think you're going to see more and more in the future, as we've talked on a number of shows, that you're going to see online education and work instead of starting out of high school with all these big student loans and debt that, you know, the average couple brings $70,000 to $100,000 of student loans into their marriage. You know, I think more realistic is going to be online education, working, getting an idea of what you really want. How many people start out their freshman, junior year, don't even know what they want to be yet, or they get a degree just to get a degree? So, as I mentioned, my kids went to junior college. I've got a daughter-in-law who had an engineering degree, has a job with a major defense contractor, which helped, and they put her through a master's degree with an online, one of the local state schools here, and she got her master's in engineering management. So the real key here is to be realistic with the income and your ability to save, and then prioritize those goals and reallocate money as those goals are met. As each goal is achieved, well, you can move the money that used to go to that goal, move it on to the other goals, and then all of a sudden those goals now move up to the top of the list and become a priority.
Well, as I've said before, Jim, over time, these goals tend to change. I even hear it from young guys at the locker room. A lot of times down at the gym, I'll say, oh, you're going over to North Idaho College. Really, what are you majoring in? Oh, nothing yet. Or I'm starting in this, but, you know, I'm not too sure, that type of thing. So, and it does, all the way from college to retirement. Sometimes the goals you said earlier, you get on later in life and say, wow, I don't want to do that. I've done that myself. All right. So the big thing right now is protecting your lifestyle. That's the primary one, is to say, this is your legacy. This is where you are. And you want to keep that going when you're retired.
You know, one of the biggest changes, John, we've probably seen since the financial crisis, with two bear markets in a single decade, not to mention a bear market in housing, is a lot more people are concerned about protecting lifestyle. Either people that are retired are finding that they have less income today because interest rates have fallen almost to zero. And then also people planning to retire are pushing back retirement dates because they don't have the money they thought they were going to have, given what's happened with two bear markets, housing, maybe job changes. So what we're seeing is a lot more considerations given to, let's say, working part-time or delaying retirement, and also more considerations on tax or tax inversions, where you have these transition lifestyle moves where you grew up in a very expensive state, New York or on the East Coast or here in California, and you decide, you know what, I'm going to retire to Nevada, Arizona, or on the East Coast, I'm going to Florida, where they have no income taxes, or Texas, where the cost of living is cheaper, in order to make retirement work. And the important thing is that once you start a plan and put it together, it's much easier. You're going to make better lifestyle choices. You're going to make better financial choices are going to be made because you're going to plan more efficiently to achieve those goals, whether it's an investment strategy or a tax strategy. For example, contributing to pension plans if you're an employee, or if you're self-employed, setting up the proper pension plan to save on taxes. Everything from 529 plans for college, and also knowing what your number is. When you make a specific goal, I want to retire at age 66, and here's the income I have, then you're going to know what your number is. You have a goal pulse now that you can sort of work towards. You know, knowing the percentage of your income you need to replace a retirement. And I think, John, a lot of middle-class Americans are finding that when they retire, they really don't spend less money. They're doing more travel. They're playing more golf. They join a country club. Medical costs. So these things are important. And also really getting a firm grasp and understanding what all your sources of income are going to be, and know which ones are going to be dependable. I mean, think of all the people that went into bond funds over the last decade, thought that they had locked in a certain interest rate, and every single year their dividends were reduced. So you really need to understand your sources of income, know what your number is, and then start early and have a realistic attitude both towards your goals and also your investment objectives.
Now, I know when you talk retirement, really what you're talking about is, first of all, having a base budget and then a bucket list. Maybe we just call it a budget list and a bucket list. So you got two lists there. What you try to do is you try to get clients to focus on the base budget first, because that's what keeps body and soul together, what you're going to need to retire at a particular level. And that's called retirement security. That's the most important thing. Now, the money that's left over after that can be saved over short time for whatever you want to put on your bucket list and allocated towards that, things that you want to do in retirement. But again, what you're recommending here is, once again, the importance of goal setting. And the most important thing is that you have to make them realistic. You have to set priorities. You have to be specific. And then basically what you're doing here is setting yourself up for success and not for failure. Wishing for something and doing something are two different things. Anything else that's important for achieving success in your plan?
Well, it's not just enough to have goals and objectives. I mean, everybody knows that's important, but it's also to know your attitude towards money and risk. And we find that individuals fall into sort of three categories when it comes to looking at money. We call the first category the fear or the protector. And then there's another category where we call the happiness or pleasure seeker. And then the third, the commitment or the giver. Each one embodies a different attitude towards money, towards investments, towards risk. And, you know, you can set goals and objectives, but unless you know what your attitude, in other words, let's say you have a goal of, I want to have X amount of dollars, I want to retire early, I want to retire at age 62 instead of 66. All right, well, that's going to take a lot more money the sooner you retire. But if you're a real conservative person, you don't like taking risk, that may be an unrealistic goal given your investment objectives towards money. So you really need to know who you are, not just knowing who you are and your investment risk parameters, but you also need to know, fitting in with that, there's other four areas when it comes to investment. You can be a growth investor where you say, you know what, I want to retire early. I want to have a lot more money. I'm going to need this kind of money, so I'm going to be a growth investor. I'm willing to take risk. On the other hand, you may be more of the fear protector type personality where you're more concerned about capital preservation. We're certainly seeing a lot more of that after the 2008 financial crisis. Or you may be a high powered executive or a high earner, let's say self-employed person, where tax minimization strategies become important because the top federal bracket is 44%. You live in California at 13.3, you're talking about 57%. So it could be tax minimization strategies. Or four, because you don't have as much money, you're more concerned about cost, is cost minimization. So there's personality, and then there's risk tolerance and attitudes towards different investors. You can't be a growth investor and say, hey, I want to accumulate a lot of money. I want to beat the financial market, but I don't want to take any risk, and I don't want to pay taxes. You know, those are conflicting goals, and it's not going to work.
Well, it seems like what you're trying to do here is to get the client, meaning an individual or a couple, to gain better understanding of what their status is, their situation, and then what their goals might be and how to achieve that so that better financial decisions can be made in the framework of that goal. What do you have to do to achieve the goal? I call it having an action item. In other words, you can yap, 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 yap. I'm sure you've been in meetings before, Jim, where there's just tremendous amounts of talk, and I'm always the sour grape that's always going, okay, what's the action item? And when the room goes quiet, I go, okay, everybody, shut up. You're talking about nonsense, you know? I used to get people mad because they'd say, you're not going anywhere with this, all right? Just a lot of talk. So when you have a plan, then you can receive guidance from various counselors. There's always wisdom in a multitude of counselors to achieve those goals within the terms of what you have. You know, because everything, Jim, is going to involve a certain level of trade-off. Life is just that way. Life is a series of infinite corrections to go down the road. In other words, you have to avoid the left ditch and the right ditch, and that's what you're doing when you're driving. You're making a series of infinite corrections, always trade-offs, to keep you on a relatively straight path. And that's what it does. And this achieves the best possible financial outcome. It's really about getting people, your clients, to understand who they are and how they think about money, and that disciplines them. That's a form of discipline, Jim, that gets them to the goals that they wish to achieve. So now, explain, if you would, the financial personality types you've discussed, from fear and greed to happiness. That's an interesting spectrum, so do that.
Well, I mean, when you take a look at what your attitude is towards money, you know, one category that is very common that they found in studies done on attitudes towards money and investing is the fear or protector personality. People with a fear money mind are protectors. Their greatest goal is a quest for security. Peace of mind is what typically drives their investment decisions. Unfortunately, regardless of the amount of success they attain, they rarely feel secure or satisfied. That's because no matter how much they have saved or whatever their income levels are or the opportunities that are presented to them, they always think in terms of, uh-oh, what can go wrong and how to avoid future financial pain. Now, part of that can be good. I mean, the good things are is typically they live well within their means, are well prepared for the unexpected, they're cautious, and they're careful decision makers. However, protectors can be well prepared for bad situations and are very good stewards of their money, but also there's a negative side of this. They're slow to make decisions, and as a result, they miss a lot of opportunities. Think of all the people that have been in cash waiting for a big market correction in what has been a big bull market. They experience anxiety when facing big commitments, you know, putting money aside, whether it's maybe a private education for their kids or a bigger number, let's say, for retirement. And they make personal sacrifices to maintain that security. Often, they overemphasize and delay gratification and often prepare for bad results that never materialize. Now, there are things that can happen that can improve these decisions. If you are generally disposed towards this sort of mindset when it comes to money. And that is really understanding that outcomes that are worse than what actually happens. Having a method to determine really if your fears are rational or not. And we've really seen this, John, over the last 5 or 6 years. You know, the dollar collapse, the market collapse, the economy collapse. One of our listeners sent us the headlines from one of these fear and conspiracy sites. If you would have read all those stories, I mean, you'd want to find yourself a cave, get shotgun beans, and just barricade yourself. And you have to recognize the quest for security can result in excessive personal sacrifice. You may be denying yourself some things that you could afford to have because of this excessive fear. And understanding to succeed in anything, you are going to have to take some risk. You're going to have to move out of money market funds. You might have to have some money in the stock market. And what you need to do is when you have a plan, then making financial decisions, you're not going to let fear drive making good investment decisions or planning decisions. So these are things that are very important when you have that kind of mindset that you have to overcome this, because if you don't, John, you're not going to get to where you need to be in terms of achieving those goals.
So what about the other two characteristics? There's the happiness / commitment personality involving in money.
These are studies that have been done on money. The other one is sort of the happiness, the pleasure seeker. They desire to enjoy what their time and money can provide. It's really the driving factor. Although their primary quest is to experience satisfaction, they regularly feel that they never have enough money or time, no matter what amount they've saved, income levels, or opportunities presented to them. They find there's always something more they'd like to do or enjoy. Now, there are good things that come from this sort of attitude towards money. They're very decisive decision makers, even with big decisions. They maximize their pleasure from resources. They're more apt to take nice vacations, have a nice car. They experience very little anxiety about future problems. The bad is they often feel as that they don't have enough. Gosh, I'd like to have more. They don't spend sufficient time evaluating some of these financial decisions, and they may be a little bit too casual about future risk until all of a sudden they're caught in a bear market or a severe correction, and maybe they spend too much time on instant gratification. Now, this can be overcome by understanding that better outcomes when you have a plan, evaluating and thinking objectively about maybe some negative outcomes on decisions or goals, recognizing the importance of slowing down and maybe conducting some objective analysis before you get involved in making these decisions. and understanding that always being an optimist, sometimes a bit of caution is warranted. You may be one of those investors that you're thinking, you know what, I want to beat the market. I want to accumulate as much money because I want to retire early. Well, you know what? You don't want to be impulsive. You don't want to throw all your eggs in one basket. Go for it. Take risk by throwing into very speculative type investments. And so there's a consequence to that. And so that's why I think that understanding who you are, and then once you have that understanding, finding out some of the good things about that, but also some of the bad things, and then overcoming them with objective analysis by putting together realistic goals and putting together a plan and cementing that plan and weaving it in with not only your ability to save, but also what you're going to do as an investor.
Okay, let's look at the last category here. What do we call it? The commitment personality?
Yeah, usually the commitment person is driven by the desire to take care of people or causes that they love. Their primary quest is to find ways they can serve others and help, regardless of the amount of money they've saved, their level of income, or the opportunities presented to them. There's always more they can give to those they care about. The good thing is they're generous to those they care about. They're attentive to other people's needs. They consider the point of view of others when making decisions. Some of the bad parts is concerns about not having enough money or neglect to consider personal consequences and a desire to give more. Sometimes they emphasize opinions of others rather than their own. And the way you overcome that is understanding that people should take responsibility for their own circumstances. You can't help everybody. These are the people that sometimes will say, gosh, you know, I'm going to send my kids to private school. I don't care if it costs $150,000. I never got to go to private school. I want them. I want a real elaborate wedding for my daughter. I really love her. I'm going to give her the very best. So you really need to not only understand those needs, but also understand your own. And having a way to honestly assess these needs and recognizing the personal sacrifices that others need to make. In other words, you don't want to take care of everybody. You also need to take care of yourself. And those are the things that you really sort of put together that once you understand them, you can more realistically assign priorities and achieve goals, and especially when it comes to making investment choices.
I think it was Aristotle who said that one of the most important things you can do is to know yourself, and understanding who you are out of all of these goals is probably the most important one, a realistic and sober assessment of yourself.
Yeah, and I think the most important is when you know who you are and you know your attitude towards money, it helps define your goals and makes them more realistic. Example, if you want to retire early, what is that going to entail? Well, you're going to have to take risk. You're going to have to go into the market. Well, if you have a fear personality, that's not realistic because you're going to get the heebie-jeebies anytime the market corrects. And believe me, folks, every bull market has a correction, just like bear markets have rallies. So you set goals that are more achievable because when you know who you are, you're going to say, okay, this is who I am. Realistically, this is the kind of portfolio and these are the kind of objectives so that you can make good decisions on whether you're a growth investor, safety, you're trying to minimize taxes or costs. The planning process is as much about understanding who you are and your attitude on money as it is reaching specific goals. The two, John, go hand in hand.
So here we go. Let's go down this checklist right now of everything we've discussed right here. Number one, understand who you are regarding money. Number two, set specific goals and then set them in order of priority. This is really important. The first one that you have to achieve, et cetera, et cetera. Three, know what your numbers are, you know, for taxes, for retirement, what you're hoping to achieve at some time in the future. Four, be realistic. Okay, pie-in-the-sky thinking works only if you're going to be ambitious and achieve it that way, but just wishing for something doesn't happen. Number five, start on a daily basis to do this. You have to start early and do it on a daily basis, meaning it's always there. Save consistently, and above all, have a plan. Now, does this work or not? Let's go find out. That's what we do every week here on the program. We take a real-life case study where the case study is real, but the names have been changed to protect the privacy of the individuals, who this week we will call Matt and Deborah Stein.
This is an interesting case, John, because we are now on the third generation of planning with Matt and Deborah. Matt was a cardiologist. I met him in 1985 through his father. We put together a retirement plan for his father, set up his parents' financial plan, including an estate plan with wills and trust. And he basically said, you know, my son could really use your help. He was involved in a medical practice that they had made some bad investments and gotten taken advantage of. And his son was very much more of what we call a commitment caretaker type personality, wanted to have a plan, wanted to make sure his wife was taken care of, his kids were taken care of. And so Matt had a group practice. They were making good money. Originally, Matt was referred to me by his father. And the doctor's practice, as I mentioned, made some bad investments in tax shelters. They didn't want to make the same mistake again. So that's how I was sort of brought into the picture. Now, what he wanted was a financial blueprint for the future. He had the following goals. Once again, this is getting back to what we just talked about in the show today. First thing that he already had a home when I met him. He didn't have any debt from medical school because that went with the planning that his father had done, and he wanted to continue the same tradition. He had money for a down payment. His dad helped him with that and also helped him with his college education. Money was put aside for medical school. And for any of you doctors out there, I don't need to tell you what that cost you. So, Matt was fortunate. So the things that were important to him when we started his plan, he wanted bar mitzvah. He had three kids, two girls, one son. Next was college, then wedding for his two daughters, and retirement.
Yeah, see, Jim, there's that collision we were talking about. You know, young people starting out, their priorities are getting the family together, getting the careers established. They're not thinking about retirement. So that's the type of thing you run into.
It is. I mean, when young families start out, typically it's home, college, and retirement. And when you're saving those dollars, as we talked about earlier in this program, you probably are going to allocate more towards a home. Once you have a home, in this case, that's what Matt and Deborah had, it was going to be allocating more money towards things that were more important to him right now. The immediate priorities, John, for him was college education for his children, because obviously here's a guy that went through medical school, walked out with no debt because of what his father had done. So he wanted to do the same thing, provide for college for all three of his children, weddings for his two daughter, and then also retirement, because he wanted to retire someday. So, and mainly that was going to be done through the group's profit sharing plan, and then also personal IRAs for both him and his wife. So in his case, his priorities, since he already met the priority, didn't have any debt, already owned a home, it was really setting up his children in the same way his father had taken care of him.
Well, now, this gentleman has been a client since 1985, so that's pretty much a 20-year track record. I would guess he came to you, what, probably middle age, early middle age or something like that, which means he's going to be close to retirement. That was the plan. How did it come to fruition?
Well, when I met him back then, he was in his 30s. I mean, his first priorities, as I talked about, was to do what his dad had done for him, was fund college, education for his children, weddings. And the only thing that was on the retirement agenda for tax savings was a profit-sharing plan. Now, remember, the 80s and 90s, when he was young, that would make sense. You know, let's take care of the kids, put some money aside. And Matt's goal was to have $1 million at retirement. Now, remember, folks, $1 million today obviously doesn't buy as much, but that was 1985. And on $1 million back then, we were getting 12, 13%, 14% when it came to Ginnie Mae's. So, you know, his thinking was, gosh, if I have $1 million, I'm invested in investments at that time producing 12, 13, 14%, he would be making as much from that $1 million producing interest income as he would in his salary. Now, when he retired, he had roughly about $1.3 million in a pension, which was a rollover from the group practice. Now, he was working part-time in another practice where there was about $261,000 in a pension. They had downsized their house, sold the big house when the kids moved away, and downsized, paid cash for a house, and put that money in a trust account. So that was roughly close to $500,000. He had roughly about $50,000 in the bank, what we call a CD, and his wife had $50,000 in her IRA. The home was free and clear, and basically, the investment goals were twice what he thought they were going to be when he retired. Obviously, we had more than $1 million in pension, IRAs, and then also taking the equity out of the house, so we had over $2 million in assets. So we achieved the investment goal, but once again, $2 million in this last decade or late last decade did not buy the same lifestyle that $1 million would have bought at 12, 14% in 1985.
Well, all right. So it sounds like Matt was able to achieve the goals by the time he retired. Anything that was key in following his plan? Because you're always talking about a plan. Key issues.
I think probably remaining disciplined, sticking to the plan. We moderated the plan as the economy changed and as personal circumstances change, obviously, with kids. You know, once the kids were all out of the house, you know, I had to take a look at a custom house. Do we really need the big house? Stay there with all this equity tied up into a house when we don't need a big house like this. So that was probably, I think, John, staying disciplined, monitoring the plan, changing it as circumstances changed.
That's where the real problem comes in. And every type of a plan, whether you're an athlete or planning for retirement, requires a certain amount of discipline because you're going to have to forego certain things and give up other things in order to achieve your goals. And there's always this buffeting that comes against you from life and the demands of things that you want to do on the imminent moment, whatever it happens to be. But it seems like he was successful in trying to avoid a lot of those pitfalls.
Well, I mean, having a plan set him apart, but also taking a long-term view with his investment portfolios. I mean, Matt and Deborah went through the 87 stock market crash, the 91 recession, Gulf War, the tech mania, the 2008-9000 crash, and he stuck with an asset plan. Obviously, we modified it as he got closer to retirement, and he didn't panic. You know, he had been investing now for almost three decades, and that's why he is where he is today.
Now, I'm assuming you're still in touch and he's probably enjoying retirement. How's it look like? Going well?
Well, he's not completely retired. He still works part-time, but he's old enough now at 66. When you get full Social Security benefits, the good thing about that is you can continue to work and you don't give up any of your Social Security benefits as a result of working part-time. And that's where the additional money in the pension was. And basically, he uses that part-time income. It pays for the two trips. He's got one daughter that works overseas, married to her husband, is an executive with one of the major international oil companies. He has hobbies from golf to bridge. So, I mean, he's doing the things that he likes, but he has that extra income, and he's allowing his rollover IRA and pension plan to accumulate because now we've gone into a next stage of his financial plan, which is creating a legacy, and that's what he would like to do. He'd like to leave each one of his kids $1 million. I mean, when he thinks back at his own career, how his father had sacrificed to put money aside that enabled him to go through medical school and come out of it with no debt, a little bit of help for him and his wife to make the down payment on their first home, and that's what he wants to do, is leave a legacy. And I'm happy to say that we're doing planning for two of the kids right now, and the kids have a plan. They're putting money aside, especially the one that works overseas, married to the oil executive because a lot of their income is tax exempt, living expenses covered by the oil company. They're salting away money. I mean, think of putting a large part of your salary away at an early age. If they keep going down this route, they'll be even further ahead than their dad, who was a very successful doctor. So I think all of this now, we have now gone to, you know, it's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy. We are now getting into a situation where we're now thinking about legacy to the children now that he's achieved all these goals. And they all began, John, with realistic goals on money, realistic goals and discipline, and staying with that discipline throughout his working career. And now he's not only enjoying retirement, but now changing to the point of thinking of leaving each one of his kids a legacy of $1 million. And this is just, it's kind of exciting to see this go through three generations and be successful, but it goes to show you what can be done with planning, and especially if you started early enough. Well, that concludes this week's Lifetime Income Series. Hope you enjoyed it, but you know, I hope you take some comfort from the case study of Matt and Deborah Stein that we talked about here, because this can show you what can happen when you have a plan, start early, you remain disciplined, you set realistic goals, you don't deviate from it, and then as circumstances in life change, you can change that. Right now, Matt and Deborah, their number one goal is a legacy to each one of their three children. And the important thing is they had a plan, and they stuck to it. and I hope you'll have one too. This is the beginning of the year. This is the time to think about putting together a plan, setting financial goals for yourself. It's never too late. You can always start. Why not make this year, 2015, the year that you start and have a financial plan? Well, we've run out of time. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Lifetime Income Series. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.